Welcome to the South Carolina State Library's podcast, Library Voices SC. I'm Curtis Rogers, Communications Director, and today I'm pleased to have with us in our studio Dr. Gloria Swindler Boutte and Dr. Aaron Miller. Dr. Boutte is a professor at the University of South Carolina's College of Education's Instructions and Teacher Education Department. She is the author of three books, has received more than $1.7 million in grants, and has more than 87 publications, and has presented her work internationally in China, Africa, Australia, South America, and Canada. And by the way, I had to cut down your list of countries into just continents because there were so many. She has served as a Fulbright Scholar and visiting scholar at several universities in the United States and abroad. And Dr. Aaron Miller is an assistant professor of language and diversity in the Reading and Elementary Education Department at University of North Carolina, Charlotte. She teaches undergraduate courses in elementary language arts methods and diversity in urban education. She has been nominated to the elementary section of the National Council of Teachers of English and researches signs and symbols of whiteness with elementary age children. So welcome both to the podcast.
Thank you.
Glad to have you here. So today you conducted a workshop for us here at the State Library, and it's titled Culturally Relevant Practices for Classroom Management. So can you tell us a little bit about what's the story behind how you both came to partner in conducting this kind of a workshop?
Well, I actually came to know Dr. Boutte about 10 years ago or so. I was second grade, or just left teaching the classroom, and then first grade, and started on my doctoral degree and taught, took a class, one of Dr. Boutte's summer classes entitled Educating African American Students. And the class changed my perspective on teaching, on myself, on learning, and I only wish that I had had that class before I started teaching. It would have made such a difference in my teaching. And I learned so much from her, and so as I continue my doctoral studies, I tried to take as many classes and as many workshops as I could from her, and ultimately I was lucky enough to have her co-chair my dissertation committee, and we have stayed in contact ever since, and we've collaborated on other projects before, and so we've really come full circle to be able to offer this together.
Great, wonderful.
Yeah, I agree. Working with Aaron is a joy. We do collaborate on publications, on presentations. Mm-hmm. We also have some common personal interests. Her son and daughters and my grandchildren attend the same school, so we try to keep in contact very often. So when this opportunity came, it made sense for both of us because we both focus our work on issues of equity.
Mm-hmm.
And we both have done work on culturally relevant teaching, and the whole idea of culturally relevant management is something that teachers really want to know more about. So it just made sense. In fact, I see a product coming out of this in terms of us writing about this more later.
And there is a book, right, that did you both author? Or?
They used my book. It's called Educating African American Students and How the Children, and in fact, it includes lots of issues that we discussed today, particularly how do you teach in a way that's culturally relevant so that teachers can experience academic achievement among their children, help their children become, students become culturally competent and what we call critically conscious, where they really learn to think about the sociopolitics of the world and themselves. And so we're using that book as the larger framework of the work that we're doing. So today's workshop was just focusing on management, although we pointed out that it's very difficult to focus just on management because all of those topics are interconnected.
And how do you normally see when you do this kind of training the racial makeup of your attendees? Is it more African American or more white, or is it a combination?
I feel like it's not one or the other. I think it's everyone, because I think that these are issues that are not exclusive to one particular racial group. We know in our country that white female middle class teachers make up most of the teaching force. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that these issues are not relevant for teachers of any race, mm-hmm. or that classroom management is not a pervasive concern for educators across the board.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I agree. In my case, it's been both. Sometimes it depends on a school. If a school calls you, they're really having particular issues. It could be a school with mostly white faculty. It could be a school that has faculty from different ethnic groups. Mm-hmm. It can be a school that has majority African-American faculty. But I agree that there are issues that are relevant to all teachers. In my courses, mm-hmm. at USC, it's usually mostly white female mm-hmm, teachers. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they receive it because they understand that there's a need to sort of reframe and rethink what they've thought about classroom management, mm-hmm. because what they've tried is not working. So we try mm-hmm. to bring them research-based strategies mm-hmm. and frameworks that have been shown to be effective.
What do you think is probably one of the more effective strategies when you're you know, talking to groups like this that maybe they find the most useful?
I think what helps for us is to help them understand that we're not trying to give them any prescripted mm-hmm. solutions. Mm-hmm. We try to give them a framework, and I think participants find that helpful, a way of thinking about discipline that makes them think of many different factors, mm-hmm. Such as including themselves mm-hmm. in the equation, who they are as teachers, how are they thinking about the students. Also, you know, including the families, the communities, the school policies. We try to help them think holistically. Mm-hmm. So I think they find that helpful. We try to use either scenarios and video clips where they can see situations and scenarios that are similar to what they have encountered. Mm-hmm. And I think that's compelling for them. Our larger frame for the story we use the parable and how are the children. It focuses on a Maasai story, which talks about how Maasai warriors use that as a greeting. They would ask, and how the children, mm-hmm. to help us understand that our larger goal is to make sure the children are well, mm-hmm. not only in our individual classrooms, but for the larger society. And in Maasai culture, when they ask, and how the children, they want to hear the children are well. Mm-hmm. Because if children are well in society, there's no need for war. There's no need for you to protect them from any ills. Mm-hmm. That, you know, things are going to be fine. And what we know is that teachers go into this field because they care about students. Mm. And they want to have good outcomes, social, cultural, academic. They want to have really strong outcomes. And so that's compelling to teachers when we have a framework that lets them see the humanity in themselves and in the students. Mm-hmm. And also we try to show examples of teachers who have been successful.
Mm. That and is important.
Yes, and then we try to show the connection also to academic outcomes, because that's one of the key things teachers are thinking about. But we also talk about real issues like disproportionality in terms of who is getting suspended, who's getting expelled, who's getting disciplined, and why. Mm-hmm. So we have conversations about that. We try to provide a knowledge base as well. Like today, we shared 6 short articles about the issue, mm-hmm. so they have a body of knowledge that they can draw from as well. So I think we try to do a holistic sort of coverage mm-hmm, mm-hmm. in a short amount of time.
Right, yeah.
But we try to go deep.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Do you ever see any light bulbs go off, you know, when you're looking out and you're doing the training and you can see maybe someone, an attendee, and they just kind mm-hmm. of brighten up? There's something that they know that they can take back with them?
Well, I think the fact that the workshop extended far past the time that was allowed today or, you know, allocated today, and the fact that people wanted to hang around and tell stories mm-hmm. answers your point. Mm-hmm. I think light bulbs do go off, and I think that it's not so much anything that we're sharing, but it's the connection that, you know, these are issues that are relevant and meaningful to teachers. I think anyone who comes wants to do right by children. Mm-hmm. And I think sitting in a space and hearing other educators struggle and wrestle with the same kinds of things definitely resonates for participants.
Good. It's really important because, you know, I've done some training in the past, and, you know, if you know you're on target and you mm-hmm. see those light bulbs go off and it goes over and people are talking, then that's really, really beneficial.
It is. And I think, you know, when Erin started in talking about the course, the Educating African American Students course, it's been transformative for many teachers. Teachers have often written that or said it. Like today, when you present, and you know this from presenting, you kind of read the room, mm-hmm. and people were on board. Mm-hmm. And one of the participants, when we did an activity, she said, oh, I'm going to rethink how I do this, mm-hmm. you know, based on something she'd read and gotten from there. And as you said, on the way out, many people said, oh, this is good. And so we tried to make it practical enough mm-hmm. so that people can have something tangible.
Mm-hmm. That's very important that they have takeaways that they mm-hmm. can go back and in their own classrooms or whatever their situations are, they can use what you've told them.
I think it is important, and I think that we try to find that nice balance between mm-hmm. theory and practice, because we're really careful about saying that we're offering a toolkit. These are the 10 things you can do to take back to your
right.
classroom.
Exactly.
Because we use culture as a framework. Mm-hmm. And culture is not static, mm-hmm. right? In mm-hmm. one culture, in one part of the state, and, you know, an urban area versus a rural area, a mm-hmm. suburban area, et cetera, it's going to be different. Mm-hmm. The culture changes.
Mm-hmm.
The children change, right?
Yeah.
And constantly with technology. So culture is ever changing. So mm-hmm. we're not in the business of handing teachers a checklist mm-hmm. to use that would work in every situation. So we do work really hard to develop and continue to rethink and redevelop mm-hmm. ideologies mm-hmm. that drive practices, mm-hmm. but while at the same time recognizing that seeing these ideologies and these frameworks, how they might manifest mm-hmm. in particular ways, mm-hmm. does give practical examples and strategies. So we try to rest in that middle space.
So you're really trying to create critical thinkers.
Exactly.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because once people, educators, can change their thought process about something, there can be more of a systemic change.
Absolutely.
That's great. So tell us a little bit about, and this is at the University of South Carolina, the Center for Education and Equity of African American Students. And I think you, Dr. Bouti, work with that. What's that all about?
Okay, yes, I am the executive director and the founder. Initially, the center started in 2002. It was funded through the South Carolina Commission on Higher Education. It was at Benedict College, and the goal of the center is to see how we can help teachers and teacher educators to be more effective teaching African American students. That's mm-hmm. our larger goal. Mm-hmm. So we asked, what is the role we can play in this process? And so we, in 2017, we relaunched the center at the University of South Carolina. And we have several services we offer. We offer monthly roundtable discussions where educators can come in. We read an article or view a film, and they come in and we talk about it. We try to translate theory into practice mm-hmm. because we know there's a lag there. We know that a lot of things we know in higher education, it hasn't quite made it to the classroom level or the
sure.
school level. So we try to figure out ways to translate that. This has been very successful. Usually we have between 20 and 40 people per month. It's an ongoing dialogue, and we try to leave them with something they can take back. So mm-hmm. we do the roundtables. We have a yearly conference. In 2019, we're going to have Dr. Gloria Latson-Billings, who is the author of Dream Keepers, Successful Teachers of African American Students. She's one of the top three educators in the world. She's going to come be our keynote speaker. Last year, we had Dr. Richard Milner. We were shooting for 300 mm-hmm. Professors. teachers and community members, mm-hmm. we ended up with over 400 people.
Wow.
Yeah, and not only were they from South Carolina, but we had people from Georgia and North Carolina as well. So this year we're shooting for 500, but we have an annual conference that focuses on issues of equity. Mm. We also work with schools, like we have an urban school cohort where we're working with four schools where we're doing ongoing professional development. Mm-hmm. We have a cadre of teachers from different grade levels, some elementary, some middle, some high school, from different content areas who have been shown to be effective teaching African-American students. Mm-hmm. And then they write lesson plans that we share on South Carolina ETV's Learning Why, mm-hmm. so other teachers can see examples of that. Our goal with that is to get to a point where people can visit their classrooms and kind of see effective practices in mm-hmm. action. Mm-hmm. So every year we add three new teachers, and we're trying to build at particular schools. So we have schools that we try to build the teachers. And
that way you have examples.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And some of that's published in the book that I mentioned earlier, and a lot of the works, we publish the works, so we share at conferences. But the larger goal is to create sort of what we think of as a renaissance in Black education, mm. where we start to reclaim and understand and see examples of Black students being successful. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So we normalize that. Mm-hmm. And then we also want teachers of African-American students to see teaching them as exhilarating and exciting rather than laborious. Mm-hmm. So we try to transform teachers and give them the frameworks that they need, mm-hmm. some strategies we use, you know, to help that we know have been successful, examples of lessons to get them energized mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and activated to really want to teach African-American students. And to do that, we often show models, you know, nationally and here in South Carolina, people who have done it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's what's transformative, I think, about the work at the center is that it does change people's minds. Mm-hmm. This can be done. Mm-hmm. This can be enjoyable work. Mm-hmm. The students can be highly successful socially and culturally, mm-hmm. You know, successful. So that's pretty much what the center does.
That's wonderful. It reminds me of a quick story I'll tell. I was being a volunteer to read to a group of third grade students in a primarily African-American school. And when I got there, this one student gave me a tour of the whole school. And we got to an area that had a bunch of college banners on the wall. And I said, "So do you like Clemson or Carolina? Where do you want to go to school?" And he said, "Harvard."
All right. That's a nice story.
That's a way to think big, you know, and that's wonderful.
That's exactly.
And that's great, you know, and that kind of experience for me as a white male, you know, to have this third grade African-American child talking about Harvard, I was like, that's wonderful. That's exactly what you need to be thinking about. So,
and I mean, that just reminds me, that's one of the key concepts we teach when I talk about strategies. We try to teach what we call counter narratives, which are narratives or stories that contradict what the mainstream mm-hmm. messages are mm-hmm. about African Americans, and mm-hmm. that's a wonderful counter narrative.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. That was mm-hmm. a wonderful experience for me that I will volunteer over and over again mm-hmm. to do. But Dr. Miller, is there any kind of similar center at the University of North Carolina in the system that maybe concentrates on the same thing?
Not specifically related to African-American students mm-hmm. That I'm aware of, which is why I think that this center, Gloria mm-hmm. Center, is so unique and so wonderful. And just the fact that it's in South Carolina, mm-hmm. it's just so important.
Right.
The University of North Carolina at Charlotte is situated in a very large urban mm-hmm. Area. Mm-hmm. So we do have specific programs, and we actually have an urban campus. Mm-hmm. And an urban ed program that focuses more generally on issues related to teaching urban students.
Mm-hmm. That's it's so important that, you know, we that major universities have these kinds of programs for educators so that they, you know, because, I mean, continuing education is required for educators. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they have to be able to find opportunities that will open them to many different experiences. Because, like you said, you know, things change and race evolves and demographics evolve and it's important to keep up. So what do you, either of you, think the educators can best benefit from the information that you provide in your workshop? What's the number one takeaway you want them to have when they leave your workshop?
I think one thing is the whole idea of, and we both stressed this, restorative justice, understanding that you want to humanize students in the process, and so they leave thinking about ways to do that, how you teach students to learn from whatever occurred, the misbehavior, if you will, mm-hmm. How they can learn from that, make it right, mm-hmm. you know, atone for what's been done, and how this involves the whole classroom and the whole school. I think that was one big message. We were really happy to have the participants we had and the interest we had in the workshop. Ideally, school-wide efforts work best, but I think the big idea is sort of restorative and culturally relevant management, would you say?
I would, and I would just say that I would, you know, add that wrapped up in the whole idea of culturally relevant management and culturally relevant practices. Mm-hmm. Again, that's a term coined by Gloria Latson-Billings. He's going to be a mm-hmm. keynote speaker at the conference Gloria was talking about. Is this reframing the pervasive deficit view mm-hmm. of children of color and their families? Mm-hmm. I think so often when educators struggle mm-hmm. in the classroom, and we know that educators name classroom management as being one of the most challenging
sure.
parts about learning to teach. The tendency can be, which comes, I think, out of frustration and sometimes just not knowing more or not mm-hmm. knowing better, mm-hmm. to blame the children or mm-hmm. to blame their families. Mm-hmm. And what that does is it takes the onus of responsibility away from us as mm-hmm. educators. Mm-hmm. And so I think that culturally relevant teaching recenters the role of the teacher and the importance of the teacher changing or rethinking views that frame children in deficit ways. So deficit approach is what children are lacking, what their families don't have, mm-hmm. right? What the children their families don't have. Mm-hmm. And culturally relevant teaching, one of the fundamental parts of it is focusing on asset-based teaching, so mm-hmm. looking at cultural resources that mm-hmm. children have and looking at cultural differences as cultural resources. Mm-hmm. And I think that's another important takeaway.
Mm-hmm. Great. What are some of the special projects both of you are working on maybe in the coming months, either related to this or something else?
I'm really excited because in about a week, I will head to Ghana, West Africa. I have a Fulbright Hayes grant. It's a grant that allows you to take a group of people to study abroad for 4 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah, and so we are studying what we call African diaspora literacy. Mm-hmm. And that is looking at African people wherever they are mm-hmm. in a diaspora, so whether they're here in the U.S. or on the continent of Africa or in the Caribbean, in Europe, what are some of those cultural legacies that we share. So in this case, we have 6 university professors, mm-hmm. 6 K-12 teachers, and 1 community member, and we're going to look at connections between Ghanaian history, culture, language, religion, politics, and all that, mm-hmm. and African-American history, culture, language, and politics. And then each person has to have what we call a curriculum project where they have to figure out how to teach this information either in their university classroom mm-hmm. or in their K-12 classroom. So I'm really excited about that. This is a continuation of work that I've been doing. This will be the 4th group. Mm-hmm. We've gone to Sierra Leone, we've gone to Cameroon, and went to Egypt, where we take groups of people to really learn about connections. So I'm excited about that. That's the thing I'm most excited about.
That sounds neat.
That's in my immediate future.
That is exciting. I have a number of research projects that I'm excited about right now, but I'll talk about one in particular that I'm most proud of. A colleague of mine at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte, Dr. Tia Glass, and I have developed a four-course sequence on anti-racism in urban education. And it's no small feat to develop a class. We're very happy with this. And it has been formally adopted through our university, and we're now in the process of institutionalizing it for our MED students in urban education. But the idea is the students would take this 100% online class as a sequence. The first course is the history and psychology of racism, and that's taught by my colleague Dr. Glass, and then I teach the second course in the sequence, which is racial identity development and theories. And then she teaches the third, and it's the history of racism in school and schooling. And then I teach the capstone class, which is anti-racist activism. And we're trying to get it cross-listed for PhD students as well. But we just taught the first iteration of the sequence this year, and we're working it through getting it certified through an online program called Quality Matters, which is sort of the gold star standard of approval for online classes, because we recognize the need for to change the delivery of the way that we offer courses that we know in our changing society, face-to-face doesn't work for everybody, and we want to be able to reach a broad audience with that. So that's been something that we're really proud of. It's been about two to three years in the making now, and it's coming to fruition.
Excellent. Yeah.
That's great.
Wow, that's exciting.
It really is. It's both of you are
so
doing. Both of you are doing such wonderful work, and I personally think it's very important that you have a workshop like Culturally Relevant Practices for Classroom Management, because it's something that is needed. You know, we have a society where race is very important to people, and there's not a lot of conversation, open conversation, that goes on about it, but I think what you both are doing is really important to our educators.
And, you know, you don't have many institutions that have programs like the one that Aaron just outlined, so teachers are frustrated because they haven't had the preparation to teach culturally and linguistically diverse students. And so they get out, you know, with the best of intentions, and they end up being very, very frustrated in terms of trying to figure out, what do I do? How can I be effective? So, yeah, there's a huge need. I think that when they sent out the announcement, there was an immediate response. I mean, she had to have a waiting list because there were so many people interested in the topic.
Yeah, definitely.
And we know that that's this whole idea of classroom management is one of the top issues that teachers say they want more information on.
Well, you both are doing a great job, and it's greatly appreciated.
Thank
so thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having us.
And thank you to our listeners. You can find Library Voices SC on Podbean, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio, or add us on your favorite podcast app. Our podcast website address is librarycast.podbean.com. We love hearing from our listeners, so send us your comments and suggestions for future topics. Library Voices SC is the official podcast of the South Carolina State Library. Until next time, this is Curtis Rogers. Thanks for listening.